Well, Daniele, the Jays were looking for a 5-game win streak today after a dramatic victory last night. Not so many dramatics today, I would say. Rather a ho-hum outing from the offense. Jays managed just 6 hits and 1 run over a full 9 innings of work. The Pirates only had to use 2 pitchers to shut down the offense today in front of a packed house here at the Rogers Center. An 8-1 loss for the Jays. They are now 27-30 on the season, which essentially ensures that by the time of this stretch of quote-unquote winnable games ends, which ends tomorrow with a rubber match, it does mean they cannot get back to 500. I got to say, you know what, at least silver linings. Here's my silver lining, my moral victory for today. At least on a day you get blown out, the Jays had the courtesy to play this game in 2.5 hours. I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, I'm sure... I mean, I know you appreciate it after the marathon that was a 4-hour game last night. You know what, Joe? I got to be honest. I thought that was a really listless performance. That was deflating. Like, really uninspiring. And, you know, to be even more frank, I thought the game was decided in the first inning. Like, you know, the Jays, the Kikuchi comes out. Pirates put up a 3-spot. The game at that point, I'm thinking, okay, you know, within that, really, there was a hard hit ball, and that was the Cabrian Hayes 2-run shot. Mm-hmm. Bad pitch, hanging over the plate. It was a slider, middle. You're like, okay, clearly you say Kikuchi would want that one back. And the result of it being a 2-run shot is because he walks Andrew McCutchen to lead off the game on 4 pitches. Clearly, rough start, not exactly how you want to get your day going, especially coming off of a rough outing a week ago in Detroit. But it was the bottom half when the Jays step up to the plate. And this has been a running theme with this team. We've talked about it endlessly. Now they're synonymous. This 2024 edition of the Toronto Blue Jays is in the record books because they've gone 23 straight games without scoring a first inning run. And Dalton Varsho does you a favor in a spot where your offense desperately needs to pick up your pitcher. Mm-hmm. Because Kikuchi quieted things down, and he got back into a decent groove after that first inning. And then, you know, we can get into specifics about what unraveled in the fifth. But the game stabilized. They had a chance with Varsho tripling after David Schneider led off the game, flies out, boom, Varsho triples, runner on third. Vlad, good at bat, draws a walk. Now you've got 2 on. Now we get to 2 guys in scoring position on a stolen base. Bo Bichette strikes out. Daniel Vogelbach strikes out. Just painful in that moment. That was where the game, in my estimation, if I'm being frank, I thought, oh boy, this thing could get away from them. And it did. And it completely unraveled from there even further. And that was perhaps their best chance to muster some meaningful offense in this game in a spot where they could have picked up their starter.
Yeah, Jay's first inning woes in terms of scoring runs has now been extended to a franchise record 23 games. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jay's Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's text line, as I always say, is always open. And still, stay tuned today for our giveaway. We'll be giving away a City Connect jersey at the end of the show. Kind of a bummer they lost today, because I think, honestly, I think more people would listen if they would win. But unfortunately, they lost. But either way, still want to give away this jersey. So we'll throw out the trivia question for you to answer. So instructions on how to be entered into the draw and answer the trivia question will come before we go today. But yeah, you're right. Like, Kikuchi wasn't great, obviously. Nope. Was not great today.
Nope.
But I mean, you know, when he doesn't get run support again, I mean, there are multiple things wrong, certainly. Like, it's not all mutually exclusive. Like, things, more than one thing can happen and be true at the same time, which is that he was not great today, and the offense was also pretty bad once again. But I just, when Kikuchi has been so good for the vast majority of the season, and again, the start in Detroit wasn't great, and today, 5 1/3, 9 hits, 6 runs, 5 of them were earned, 4 strikeouts, 1 walk, and he gave up the home run to Cabrian Hayes in there as well.
Yep.
His pitch count was actually oddly relatively efficient, but they kind of had to take him out at that point, because it kind of felt like in the 5th and 6th, started to unravel a little bit. Because it's funny, after the first inning, He locked it down, right? He only allowed a single over the next three innings of work, and then in the fifth and sixth he ran into some issues. So, you know, I get them taking him out despite the pitch count being where it was, but I got to say, it's just given that Kikuchi has been so good for so much of the season, I find it hard to place a lot of the blame on him. And I know he departed when it was, what, 6-0, I think, or 5-0 or 6-0, but at the same time, like, you got to be able to count on your offense at some point, right? And again, I'm not sure I'd go so far to say the game was over when they didn't score in the first inning, because they had chances. It's not like they didn't have chances as the game went on. They actually did have a fair amount of chances, but every time someone got on base, it felt like the very next batter was a ground out or a flyout, essentially.
Yeah, you know, I thought Vladdy had a great game. His at-bats were really, really sharp. Even, you know, it's funny, the one out he makes, which was in his final at-bat, he almost goes yard, right, where he drives it to the warning track in center field, and perhaps as if that's any other part of the ballpark, it might be a homer. But, you know, I thought that was obviously a tremendous positive to see him. Apart from Vladdy, though, Show, I offensively, man, were there some tough at-bats. And, you know, here's another instance, like Bo Bichette. You know, I talked about the bat in the first inning where he strikes out on three pitches. Mind you, that's the key. It was a three-pitch strikeout, Show. And this is a guy that's led, you know, the American League in hits twice in his career. You gotta have a better sense of when to be uber aggressive and when to be a little bit more patient. Kikuchi and the history of not getting the necessary run support, that's becoming a real storyline. I like you, am willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, in certainly in this instance, and even, quite frankly, even though it's back-to-back starts, I'll give him plenty of rope and leeway right now. The next one will be very important. But how about the defense makes a play for you, too? And I'm going to talk about George Springer's incredible theatrics, because he's been fantastic and made some outstanding plays. You know where he settles in after it's 3-0? We get to the fifth. Jared Triolo, you know exactly where I'm going. That ball to third base.
Yeah. That was,
IKF,
that was tough.
You're getting paid to play defense. You're not getting paid for your bat. You're there to make those defensive
plays. I'm
not
going to crap on IKF. The guy's been so good on both sides of the ball all year.
Your job is to make those plays.
It happens.
Bo had an awful play as well.
That happens.
Awful play defensively. But it's sort of compounded, because that play's not made. Now you've got a runner in scoring position. And then, now we're adding more variables into the equation as to things that can go wrong. And what else went wrong in that fifth? He got squeezed by the umpire, the home plate umpire, and the strike zone all of a sudden became 2 inches smaller in each direction.
That was wild.
Which was crazy.
Yeah.
That's where I think, on top of that, there are different factors you have to take into consideration when evaluating his overall performance. From that point forward, it looked like he was disengaged. It looked like something was off after that, and he was serving up tons of hard contact. But up between, as you said, the first to the fifth, so a three-inning span there, he looked like he had settled things down, was going to give them an opportunity to compete and be in that game. And then some bad defense didn't help. And in addition, I thought, the first inning offensively really, really hurt their chances today.
You know, the reason I'm willing to look past the IKF, which they didn't actually rule an error, I don't think. It was ruled a hit.
So I wanted to get clarification on this. They took one of the runs off the board against Kikuchi, because he was, again, gave up six, credited with five earned.
Right.
That was an amendment after the fact.
After, yeah.
So I'm curious, was the error on IKF or was it the Bo Bichette play? Because there was an error added to the line. And I'm not 100% certain.
I have to go back and look. Yeah, I have to go back and look.
There was one rescinded. So I don't know if it was that play in particular or if it was both.
It's possible it was that play, because in the moment, I'm sitting in here with Ben and Chris, and we looked up, and it was ruled in the immediate aftermath, it was ruled a hit. So I'm not sure if that actually was eventually ruled an error. But because I actually thought it was going to be ruled an error, because, you know, like, he basically got right over on top of the ball immediately, and then it just kind of scoots, like, through under his glove, through his legs a little bit there. So maybe that was it. Maybe it was the bow play. But, the reason why I'm willing to...
I have the clarification.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
It was the Bo Bichette
play. There you go.
Shortstop, the throw to home on the contact.
On the contact, yeah. So either way, like, the reason I think I'm willing to overlook it for IKF is... largely because it goes back to a conversation we've been having basically all year, which is that How many times can you ask the pitching staff and the defense, and they kind of go hand in hand, how many times can you ask these guys to turn in the best of plays, like, 1,000 out of 1,000 times? Like, it's a, like, don't get me wrong. Like, should IKF have made that play? Yeah. Should Bo have made that play? Yes. Like, yes, like, yes, they should have made those plays. They're major leaguers. They're professionals. They're getting paid a lot of money. Those things should not happen. But, I mean, knowing that it is going to happen, like, on the odd chance, the odd time it happens, you should be able to overcome those things by getting picked up by the bats. Like, it should ultimately, like, the bats should be able to effectively erase those errors with offense.
Yep.
And we've seen a million times this year that's not the case. Like, how many times today alone did you see George Springer, like, throwing his body around out there to prevent hits from going down? Like, he was diving all over the field today.
Absolutely.
And it was great to watch. But, I mean, one of those balls gets by Springer, we're talking about maybe an even worse score, for example, right? So, I just, again, I'm not saying they shouldn't have, like, it's fine to make those errors. It's just that, again, it's just a symptom of a larger problem when it comes to, again, the offense no-showing for me.
I think that's very well said. Do you know how many base runners they had today? Off the top, you mentioned how many hits. They had 6 hits. You want to guess how many total base runners they had then?
Let's say, like, 10.
No, oh, 7.
Okay.
6 hits and a walk. Vladdy accounted for 3 of those appearances of a runner on base today. 3 times, 2 hits and a walk for Guerrero, a 2-for-3 day for Vlad. He represented up until Vogelbach picked up his second hit, half of the base runners that we saw on the field today for the Toronto Blue Jays. That's not good enough. Also show, you know, even though they won the ball game yesterday, and I'm just going to go back and I need to reference it because I do think it's important. I think it's noteworthy. So today they have 7 total base runners. Last night in that 14 marathon game, they went 2-for-19 with runners in scoring position and stranded 14 base runners.
Okay.
I mean, that's just not good enough. It's not good enough. You know, they're fortunate, given the numbers I just read, they're fortunate to have won the ball game last night. And now you come in today, and I don't know, you know, it even felt like a bit of, in the time that we are here before the game, it kind of felt a little sleepy. You know, I know both teams didn't take BP, so it's not an exclusive to the Jays, but it did feel like a more sleepy atmosphere as opposed to what you're accustomed to seeing,
right?
Even for, especially for a 3 p.m. game on a Saturday. And you're absolutely right. Just the bats, again, they need to pick up the pitcher in that spot. It's the game's not lost. There's plenty to play for. 3-0. The game is still there. And, you know, another offer for Bo Bichette. Something I noticed, Bo saw 14 pitches today. Show, you want to take a guess how many balls he took? How many pitches were ruled balls? You want to take a guess?
Probably a very low number.
Oh, it was very low. 3. 3. So he saw 14 pitches in his 4 at-bats, including having one. His first appearance was a 3-pitch at-bat strikeout. He had a 1-pitch liner in his 3rd at-bat. And in total, out of those 14 pitches he saw across the 4 ABs, 3 of them he took for balls. Come on.
And that is a part of Bo's game. Like,
I know,
but that's always been a part of his game, though.
Come on. Time and situation.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Let's get to Clifton in Etobicoke. Clifton, what's up, man?
Yeah, buddy, a whole lot, man. I don't like what I'm seeing from these guys.
Fair.
But listen, now, given where they are in the standings, and if Romano were to miss any significant time, along with, you know, what's happening to Manoah, normally this would be a situation where, you know, Ross Atkins might start looking into offloading some of these guys, right? But I was thinking the only thing that can save Ross Atkins' job is a salvage season. So I'm wondering if he would be hesitant to start selling off assets. Because I'm telling you, listen, all season long, I've been saying, you know, with these hitters, you know, these guys are going to come back. At some point, these guys are going to start hitting. But then last night, when I saw, you know, what happened there, 14 innings with the new extra innings rule in baseball, there's no way that you should have a game last for 14 innings. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know what's going on with these hitters. Like, I don't know. I can't really see the light of the tunnel now. Last night was the clincher for me, that 14-inning game. That's it, fellas.
Yeah, hey, I appreciate the call, Clifton. It's nice to hear from you again. Haven't heard from you in a while. Thanks for joining us. Okay, so Clifton, I guess the idea of beyond his general bewilderment about the hitters, which I think we all share, the idea of selling, right? Now, I actually see a couple of texts here on the text line, Daniele, about the idea of selling, right? Mm-hmm. So I see Paul from Brampton. He also texts in to say the Jays need to offload players of value. The more Kikuchi pitches, the less Jays get back in trade. He's declining every game now. Why is Schneider still coaching? I don't know. Schneider's the one like telling them not to hit the ball at the same time, right? Like, I don't know. Do you think Kikuchi, he's had two bad games in a row. This is true. But he also had a lot of good games before that.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. But still, that is a text in the idea of offloading people. Don in BC, trade Kirk, Biggio, Vogelbach, find a decent slugger, find a better slash faster running catcher. You know, it's Dale in Nova Scotia texts in a lot. Dale says, Rogers would be wise to start the fix before it's damaged beyond repair, blames the front office. So, like, a lot of people wanting to sell, right? I find it difficult to fully endorse let me rephrase that. Not that I wouldn't endorse a sell, because I do think a retool or partial sell-off is coming. But right this second, like, right now, on June 1st, is it likely they would sell? Probably not, only because I'm not sure you're going to see a lot of major trades right now. And I know a lot of people have texted in and been like, oh, what about Luis Arraez? Like, Luis Arraez from the Marlins to the Padres. That is fair. Having said that, when a Luis Arraez was traded, the Marlins had won. Like, it was like a month or a month and a half into the season, the Marlins had won like six games or something like that, right? Like, I almost feel like that was such a ludicrously miserable situation. It was so... Even like with the season the Jays have had, the season the Mets have had, the season other teams have had, the Marlins almost were in a unique spot. So I think that's why that happened. But like, look at have there been any other really major trades? Like I know Ryan Burr was acquired, but in terms of like trading like a Kikuchi or a Garcia or a Danny Jansen, like trades of that level for literally any other major league team, I don't think has really happened. So I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I just think that the problem is you're kind of stuck, right? Like, you're kind of stuck right now because we're exactly a month away from Canada Day, which means we are just about 5-6 weeks from the All-Star break, which means we are 2 months away from the trade deadline.
8 weeks, ostensibly,
You know, by the calendar date, right? So if that's the case, I would be stunned if they actually started moving pieces before Canada Day.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean,
I'm not saying they shouldn't, but I'm just that they would.
Yeah, yeah. Just in terms of being pragmatic about the entire situation, I think the more realistic actual pathway here is you're not going to see them offload or make those decisions until, dare I say, a week or two prior to the deadline. That's just, I think, the way that this front office and this leadership group operates, and B, just based on the history and typical timeline that major league teams operate under, that's generally when they make those types of decisions. So I think you're spot on there as far as there's a clear no one here disagreeing with that notion. Potentially, that is the direction that needs to be taken, but doing it now makes no sense, and it isn't pragmatic at this point. Unless, for whatever reason, somebody calls you up and blows your socks off, and at that point they say, "Sure, fine, whatever." But those are few and far between. The Luis Arraez trades are very few and far between. And if you want to look at a team, as you put it, that's had a more miserable season than the Jays or even perhaps even the White Sox, dare I say, Miami would be it. Yeah. So it was a very unique situation. You know, short of that, teams are going to wait. They're going to wait to make their final decisions. The bigger question that Clifton sort of hit on, and I think this is generally the more important predicament that the Jays faces, when the time comes, do you want Ross making those decisions? That is a real question that needs to be asked, because I'm not sure that, you know, and it could swing one way or the other, right? They could be, let's say they're a team that is 2-3 games under 500 up until that point.
Right.
Then you're deciding what direction you're going in. Are we going to try and push for a wild card, or are we going to offload the guys that are on expiring deals, have value, might have one extra year of service left on their deal that we can get some value for. And I don't know that after the years that we've seen with Ross Atkins in charge that you would want him making that decision.
I hardly consider myself the arbiter of what the fan base thinks, but based on all the texts and calls I have taken either with you or Jesse or by myself or with Julia in the last, like, 3 months, let's say, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that most people would say no to your question about should Ross Atkins be the guy making those deals. This is year nine of the, right? Year nine
it
of
is.
The of this current regime. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we have seen, I've said this a couple times, but you've seen other teams who with less success than the Blue Jays in terms of making the playoffs and win totals and all these things. You've seen teams with less success over a shorter period of time make changes, managerial changes, and regime changes, whether it's team president or the general manager. And the general manager, probably after the manager himself, is probably always the easiest person to change.
Yep.
So I do think a lot of people would say no to that question. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's keep the calls going. Let's go to Cambridge. Daryl joining us from Cambridge. Daryl, what's up?
They had three rally killers in the game today. They had Bowen, too. They had Vogelbaum and Kirk. Three guys that are just killing every rally that they have. They got a guys on base, three pitch strikeout. Vogelbaum, 2 weak ground balls, and after he hit the first single, I would have pinch ran for him. And Kirk, I wouldn't even have him on the team. I'd rather have the guy in AAA come up and catch the ball. At least he can run to first in less than 30 seconds.
Hey, Daryl, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call, Daryl.
Tell us how you really feel, Daryl.
I mean, don't sugarcoat it, Daryl. I admire that. Okay, I'm going to go even one step further than that with Daryl, because I think he makes some interesting points. And speaking of which, the other at-bat, also that Vogelbach, I think, first off, the Bull one, we've already sort of parsed through that.
Gosh.
I am in full agreement. Yeah. In the moment, I was very disappointed in that at-bat. Vogelbach strikes out to end the first inning, although works a much better at-bat. It was a full-count pitch. Probably one, and I know in the moment, even watching Chris LaRue here in the booth, he was very upset about Vogelbach's swing decision on that one.
He was.
And it was a rally killer. Okay. One other thing I did want to point out.
You know what, real quick, that was the thing about Vogelbach, that particular AB, it was so bizarre because, and maybe he was just sitting on a different pitch or he was looking for a different pitch, but he did such a good job to get it to 3-2 and then swings a terrible swing decision. And I think to myself, like, man, you just took some really difficult pitches, and then you swing at that of all things?
Yeah.
Like, what happened?
It's almost like you bailed out the pitcher.
Yeah.
You bailed out Mitch Keller because he didn't throw that thing remotely close to the plate. It's really inside. Yeah, anyway, the other thing offensively I did want to point to, because and it maybe struck me in, like, the seventh or eighth inning, you know, Kevin Biggio has another 0 for day two, and I'm like, why is he in the lineup today? What was the purpose? The central I say this respectfully because I haven't harped on him in a while, actually.
Sure.
And you know I am. you know where I stand with that guy. But respectfully, why? Show why was he in the lineup when? And I had this in front of me because I'm looking at it. I'm like, this makes no sense. Why, when he was 6-for-34 in the month of May, is he in the lineup? 1-for-his-last-9. Why, when he doesn't swing the bat? It's not illegal to take the bat off your shoulder and try to swipe and hit the ball. You know, an upward motion, hitting the ball through the plane of the plate.
Yeah.
That's not illegal. That's part of baseball. And he's so 6-for-34 in May, 1-for-his-last-9 now. What was the point? What point did he serve? When on top of that, and you and I talked about this in the pregame show, Mitch Keller is actually more difficult and harder on lefties than he is righties. Why? Where were the khakis on that one, show? I figured that out in 30 minutes before the game, looking at different splits. I don't know. Anyway, that one irked me a little bit.
Biggio, he's supposed to, like, the idea, I think that the thing that was supposed to have been the boon of having Kevin Biggio on your roster is that he has such a good eye.
Yeah.
And again, like, some of those are good pitches, being right on the edges of the zone and so on. But the other half of that is, if it's questionable, just swing at it, right? Like, I agree. Like, you can't always take. Like, I guess that his skill is supposed to be able to, like, being able to take pitches, But when the pitchers are giving you the questionable ones right on the edge there, I mean, like, I feel like you have to swing the bat just to protect a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
just a little bit.
Yeah. You don't have to do it every single time.
Actually,
but
to give credit to a guy, that's something George Springer's done a better job of. And,
yeah.
and that's helped him kind of get out of the major rut he was in. Because even today, where he doesn't, on paper, have a great offensive day, he had some good at-bats.
Yeah.
Same thing with Vladdy, right? Borderline pitches. Being more discernible with when you're what the swing decisions are. Like, it's important. Those are important. IKF. Let me give some love to IKF. One thing I can tell you he does show, he works an at-bat, man.
Yeah, he did that today.
He grinds. He had an 11-pitch at-bat today. Mitch Keller's pitch count was through the roof, and he made him work. And that's okay. They're not – you know what? At some point, maybe the talent's not going to win, right? But process will help you put – like you said, you use the word symptom. There are symptoms to help you play winning baseball. Part of it is being having that keen eye, making good swing decisions. Or in Biggio's cage, swing the bat at borderline pitches that you're like, I don't know about. Let me go. Let me see.
Yep.
Let me try to fight for the next pitch.
It's frustrating. It is frustrating. Let's get one more call in before we take a quick break. Let's go to Kevin in Kitchener. We just heard from Daryl in Cambridge. Kevin's in Kitchener. Kevin, what's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's up?
You know, when they hired Atkins and Shapiro, one thing that stuck out to me is that they said that, you know, we're going to have a minor league system that's going to have waves of talent and things like that. And I thought, you know, these guys are from Cleveland. They're a small market team. And Cleveland has always been good at drafting and developing players and things like that. And you look at, you know, the draft history of this regime, and it's been, you know, a bunch of busts. Like, they haven't developed anything, right? And so, you know, now when people are talking about, like, you know, blow up the team and rebuild or retool. I mean, why should these guys be, you know, in charge of that? I mean, their draft history in the last 9 years has been disaster, right?
It's true, Kevin. I appreciate the call, man. You know, and I've actually said this a couple times. Like, if you are going to make a GM change, and you have, I think you have someone who is in this organization right now who would probably, I think, make people feel a lot better about, like, if you are going to retool, rebuild a little bit, and you don't want the person to handle those trades being Ross Atkins, then, I mean, you have James Click. Like, he works for the Blue Jays. It's not, like, they don't even have to go out somewhere else and find another guy. Like, James Click is sitting in the offices here at the Rogers Center somewhere, right? Like, he, and here's the thing, like, I've spoken to a couple people about this, and a lot of people have regarded James Click, about people who follow the team very closely, the idea that he is someone who takes a very long eye towards the future. And if you, like, we had this conversation in the pregame as well, but if you are taking longer looks towards the future, and, you know, the future, you know, who's the core of this team beyond David Schneider and Dalton Varsho and other younger guys who are under contract for a long time, you know, you're looking to build out the position player depth and major league players as well, but, you know, you're not what the question marks about the future of Bo and Vladdy and Danny Jansen and other guys on the team, then you want someone who can take that long view for things. And James Click has, A, he is regarded as such, and B, he has the track record because he won a World Series with the Houston Astros, right? So I feel like that is like the most obvious move. The problem with it, and I know people hate when I say this, I said this a couple of times, Daniele, people hate this, but the truth is, like, beyond, and I think I can only really remember, I think the Mariners did this a couple of years ago before they brought in Jerry DePoto, which is, I guess, more than a couple of years ago at this point. But
yep.
when he was brought in, I think they cleaned house middle of the season. Mm. The White Sox did this relatively recently. And, I mean, we know where the White Sox are as a franchise. But generally speaking, we don't often see teams fire management. Not managers, but front office management mid-season. And again, maybe they should in this case if you believe the season is lost. But I only bring this up because I think a lot of people ask for that as their wish list to see, like, a front office change. And it's just, like, these billion-dollar entities are, generally speaking, pretty conservative, right? Whether that's right or wrong is a whole other conversation. But just, like, in terms of actually, like, what they actually do, they're all relatively conservative, I would say, and don't make these decisions lightly. Like, does that mean, like, the calls to make change in the offseason won't still come? No. But just, like, you know, on June 1st, it's pretty unlikely, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, there's something that you hit on there, Sho, that I'd like to circle back to, which is the thought that, you know, if you already believe this is a, quote, lost season.
Right.
And to that point, I just wanted to go and expand on that a little bit in this sense. I feel like the 2024 season needs to mean something. There's got to be an identity for this season. There's got to be something that defines what this season is about for the franchise.
Right.
And right now it just feels like they're spinning their wheels in the same position. To me, if you fail to make a change, don't know what that is. Maybe that is a general manager change. Maybe that's a managerial change. Maybe that's those, for whatever reason, those guys stay in place and you're now making decisions about the roster. But some element of change needs to occur in order for this season to be meaningful, to actually count for something in determining what the future of your team is going to look like. The worst thing I think that they could do from an organizational standpoint is to have inertia, to be overly patient, to say we're going to kick the can down the road, kick the can, almost do what the Raptors did in a sense of let's just be overly patient, too timid, excessively timid, and we'll just, again, kick the can down the road and wait for another day to make those tough decisions.
Yeah.
If I'm the Blue Jays, I think the most important thing is make a decision. Decide what your season is going to be defined by and at least make that message clear to the fan base in a timely manner. It's not now. It's not tomorrow. But it should be certainly by the trade deadline. There is a clear direction and sense of what this team is trying to do.
I think, too, the addition of the third wildcard spot has been somewhat of both a blessing and a curse in the sense that a lot of teams feel like they can make it and make some noise in the postseason. I mean, we just saw the Arizona Diamondbacks go all the way to the World Series. And at the same time, the bad part of it is a lot of teams think they can make it at the same time, right? I think because if there were only two wildcard spots, the Blue Jays would probably be not so far out of it that you'd be making it, tearing it down on June 1st, but it'd be a little harder,
it'd be
right?
More realistic.
You'd be able to more easily quantify how to make a decision there. But
for sure.
I mean, because way more teams can hang around, and you're still, quote unquote, only three games under 500, and it's a tough June schedule. So June might be the month where it like makes you decide one way or another to answer your question as to what the season is. But that's tough because, you know, it might fool teams, maybe like the Blue Jays, maybe other teams, into thinking they can still do it, right? And it's a good thing for the teams on the fringes. It might also not always be a good thing for those exact teams when it comes to making decisions. I will say, for your point about the Raptors and how they made their decision, I think the obvious thing, I know you didn't leave this on a purpose, but like the obvious difference is that they won a championship, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so they could kind of afford to like waffle about and like faff about with the roster decisions a little. I'm not saying
no
they
excuse
have.
For their complacency,
no.
But you know what? They can always say, Larry will be his right.
Yes,
right. That helps.
That helps. Like, it takes this thing off literally anything.
For sure.
Right? And then they had COVID the year after, and it completely screwed with how the season ended. And like, there were a lot of built-in excuses. I'm not sure there are a lot of built-in excuses for these version of the Toronto Blue Jays. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. Let's take a quick break. On the other side, we'll give you the trivia question and give you the instructions on how to win, be entered into the draw to win the City Connect jersey. And we'll go back to the phone lines, back to the text line as well. You're listening to Jays Talk. Jays lose 8-1 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Rubber match set up for tomorrow. Sho Ali and Daniele Franceschi are with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
No. Between the first and second, no. I mean, I think it just comes down to sticking to your plan, sticking to your approach, and getting it done. That's a little bit weird. I think between the first and second, whether it is where we are in the lineup and things like that, that's a little bit weird. I think it's nice to get on the board early. Today didn't happen.
That is John Schneider, Keegan and Matheson of MLB.com asking him, is there any logic to being the worst scoring team in the first inning, but the best scoring team in the second?
Ooh.
And John Schneider's answer, as we heard, was no, but it's weird.
Very creative question from Keegan.
It is quite a creative question, wow, because that's not something you necessarily think about too much. But yeah, the franchise record now, 23 straight games without a run in the first inning, which I actually don't put a lot of I don't really care.
Oh.
I don't really care, honestly, if
you
it's in the first inning or the second inning. Like, they just have to score more runs, period. They have to score more runs just overall. I don't think it like really matters if it comes in the first inning or the second inning, but I do think it's just another measure of how this offense is structured.
Sure, you're not a big start on time guy.
No, but I mean,
I'm a big start. Yeah. Set the tone.
But if you score a run in the second inning, you're like still starting on time.
No, not start on time, because in theory, show the top three, hopefully four, maybe five guys in your lineup that you can get to the plate in the first inning are the ones that are supposed to set the tone and provide offense. That's their general function. They are at the top of the lineup for a reason. So if you don't score early, that means now we're getting, especially for this Blue Jays team, deeper in the order where there are less threatening bats.
That is Daniele Franceschi. I'm Show Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk. We're here for another couple of minutes. Blue Jays lose 8-1. I know many of you are waiting our trivia question for the City Connect jersey. So here it is. Here's how you win the or enter to be win into the City Connect jersey draw. So we got given a couple of jerseys, Daniele, by courtesy of the Blue Jays themselves. It was very kind of them. They delivered it straight from the party on Thursday, so it was very kind of them. So to be entered into the draw to win, all you have to do is text the answer to this question to 590-590. This is the people's text line. You must leave your name and location to qualify. So here's your trivia question. Chris Bassitt is on the mound tomorrow. Schneider did confirm this despite the neck spasm. So we will see Bassitt in the series finale. It is about Chris Bassitt. His career started in 2014. So I want to know, how many times in Bassitt's career has he notched 140 strikeouts or more in a single season?
Ooh.
Okay, so in all of the years he has played, how many times in his career has he notched 140 strikeouts or more in a single season? Text the answer to 590-590, name and location, please, and I will announce the winner on tomorrow's show, just to give a chance to the podcast listeners as well. So everyone with the correct answer will be entered into a draw to win the jersey. That's that simple. I just basically go and input everyone's entries, and let me tell you, there are a lot of entries. And so I put them into one of those online generators, and then we pick someone. So
cool.
we will do that tonight and or tomorrow morning once the podcast listeners have had a chance to listen, and then we'll announce it tomorrow after the rubber match.
Excellent. Love it. They look cool. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, Chris Bassitt tomorrow will be interesting as well for him. But yes, opportunity to get your hands on that brand new City Connect merch. Jay's undefeated in those night mode units. Show that's the big thing.
Need to wear it again.
I think we're going to see it
next week. I think.
This week coming up against the
Orioles. I saw an ad on the rim of the bowl saying like it's June 3rd is City Connect week, which is starts on Monday, right?
Monday,
so,
correct.
So there you go. So that's the question. So again, text the answer. How many times has Bassitt had 140 strikeouts or more over the course of his entire career in a single season? Text the answer to 590-590. Name and location. All right, before we go, we have a couple minutes left here. I want to talk a little bit about the bullpen, because the bullpen has been very much beleaguered this year, Daniele. And Ryan Burr, sir, making his debut today. I do like it. What can I say? I like Hamilton. Okay?
That's good. I like him.
I saw some interesting stuff from the slider and the cutter. Probably he threw them both a lot, but I think I really like the slider. It looked interesting. It looked good, and he threw two innings of work. The four-seamer wasn't the liveliest I've ever seen, but I think we kind of knew coming in, for the limited amount of information we had about Ryan Burr, was that it wasn't his plus pitch. But the slider had some life to it. So I think there's some interesting stuff there, but I will caution, and I even cautioning myself, I would say, that with the imminent, it would seem, return of Bowden Francis, because I think we already know from Schneider earlier today that it's going to be Bassitt tomorrow, it's going to be Gausman on Monday, and then there's a bit of a question mark on Tuesday. It's not going to be Alec Manoah. He's on the IL with the UCL sprain. So, you know, it seems pretty likely Bowden Francis is going to be that guy, I would think, on Tuesday. But if that's the case, someone's got to go down. It's, again, like, I would be surprised. I guess it could be Brendan Little at this point. Because Jordan Romano got put on the IL today. That was the move today. But whether it's Bowden Francis or Yariel Rodriguez, the guys going down very soon probably will be Little and Burr.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, you laid it out there. Pretty sure that's how it's going to play itself out. But, you know,
I was wrong about the Eric Swanson thing. I didn't think Swanson would be the first one to get sat down, but he was.
Yeah, he was the first. I mean, I think that's more they realize he needs a bit of a reset,
right,
and some opportunity to work and hopefully rebuild his confidence a bit before bringing him back. I think they understand, and John Schneider talked about this when the decision was made. You know, they know he's still going to be an important functional piece of this bullpen, and they need him to be. Certainly they invested some capital in trading Teoscar Hernandez a couple of years ago to acquire him. Just didn't have it. So they're trying to work through things there. Ryan Burr, though, deserves credit for having a pretty solid outing. And, you know, that's a guy, and you could tell just based on the way he was. It looked like even he might have been fighting through something,
sure,
out there, because he was sort of, you know, prancing around the mound in between pitches, stepping off the rubber a lot, didn't look like fully comfortable. That being said, the slider definitely plays show. The fastball, you know, according to Baseball Savant, purely when he had through 22 pitches, 16 of which were sliders, 6 four-seam fastballs. That was the arsenal today, two-pitch mix, 6 fastballs. The velocity isn't overwhelming. That said, it's not terrible either.
Yeah, it's not bad.
He's
right.
93-94 routinely, and then the slider definitely plays. So credit to him. That's a guy you can tell has worked a ton to get back to this point and understands that the stakes are very high for him. Like, this is an opportunity to maybe carve out a chance to stay and stick in the big leagues for a little bit. And so he was eager to go out there and perform. And honestly, from a pitching standpoint, you know, he was clearly a major bright spot. We realized what Brendan Little is. Pretty clear
it's
and obvious.
It's not a diss or anything.
No, it's not. It's just, you know, a lot of hard contact in that one inning of work.
Probably organizational depth, I would think.
And even with the deployment of Zach Pop in a meaningless low-leverage spot, I think that was just more so about them ensuring that they could rest the other parts of the bullpen that worked yesterday in that 14-inning marathon game where they used a ton of pitchers. And that's even with Barrios going 7 in that game, right? So they get to use a lot of leverage guys in that spot, and Pop was the one who did not appear in that game yesterday night.
Yeah, they got to give Cabrera, Meza, Pearson, and Richards all, and Chad Green and Jimmy Garcia as well, obviously.
Correct.
But like beyond the highest leverage arms, they basically got to give everyone today a bit of a break, which is good. The unfortunate part is that the Pirates also gave all of their highest leverage arms also a break, given that Luis L. Ortiz came out there. And
what does the L stand for?
That's a great question.
You know what? I was sitting there and I'm like, generally, even if you have a middle name, people don't throw the initial in there. So why is the L in there?
Well, they have two of those guys. They have Michael A. Taylor as well.
That's true. Yes, and we all know Michael A. Taylor.
We do.
Very well.
We very much do.
Minnesota Twins, the Washington Nationals. Of course, we're very familiar with him. Yeah, but that's a great point, too, because even Mitch Keller threw a ton of pitches.
He did.
But they wanted him to get through 6. He earns the quality start.
I mean, they were able to do that because they were up by so much. If the game was a little bit closer, again, if the bats had showed up even a little bit today, Keller is done in the 5th inning, I bet you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm with you. Because he had thrown 80 pitches, show, through 4 innings.
Yeah.
I think he was at 92 after the 5th.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, at that point, you're probably given the hook. To your point, if it's like a 3-1 game even at that point, that's where you're not keeping your guy in there to potentially be susceptible to more damage.
One more time for everyone who missed the question for the City Connect jersey giveaway. One more time, Chris Bassitt on the mound tomorrow. How many times in Bassitt's career has he notched 140 strikeouts or more in a single season? You can text the answer to 590-590. Please leave your name and location. And again, I will announce the winner of the City Connect jersey. It's a men's large on tomorrow's show, just to give, again, the chance to the podcast listeners. Real quick, we got a minute left here, Daniele. Thoughts on Bassitt, expectations for Bassitt tomorrow?
Well, hopefully he just feels better than he did in his previous outing. Like, that looked awkward, and he deserves a match. We tip a lot of caps in Toronto. We will tip our cap to Chris Bassitt for the job he did working through that neck issue. But I think hopefully the Jays certainly hope they'll get a good version of Chris Bassitt with his assortment of pitches. They need it, capping off the series with a victory, hopefully, to head into this tough stretch heading into the month of June here.
Well, I tip my cap to you. Always fun when you and I get to do this together, man.
Oh, my pleasure, show. It's always fun. Thank you.
Appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Mississauga on Lakeshore Road and Watline Avenue. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele Franceschi, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Andrew Adams, I'm Sho Ali. We are out of here. Daniele is back with me in a few weeks when the Guardians are in town. I am back tomorrow with Jesse Rubinoff. For the podcast listeners out there, I know many of you listen to us live on radio, which I also very much appreciate, but for the podcasters, please do consider leaving us a five-star review. I only ask for Kevin Barker. He appreciates it more than I think the rest of us combined, I'll tell you that. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We're back tomorrow for the rubber match. We'll talk to you then.